We're going to continue in our series on thrones today, but first I just want to draw attention to the family pack. So if you're an elementary schooler in the room, how many of you guys are here? Can I hear it from you? Here? You're here? Yeah? Okay. How about we try something else? How about we hear it from everybody else for the elementary schoolers that are in the room? Yeah. That's how you do it, guys. Come on. You can be louder than that. That's awesome. All right. So we are excited that you guys are here. We welcome you here. We've provided some stuff for you because we know that, you know, this is a long talking time for a young kid. And so what we've done is we've kind of designed some things that are going to go along with the teaching that can kind of keep your mind kind of focused on what's going on, but also give you some time to kind of roam and do something more creative. So there's a listen carefully page in here, right? That's going to, for notes, if you got some notes that you want to write down, there's a little word thing. You listen for this word and how many times you hear it, and then you can get a prize. There's a draw a picture page. There's a word search page. All this stuff kind of goes along with what we're talking about in the message. There's also a little prize in here that actually does go along with the message as well. I will ask that you not take it out and throw it, because that would be super distracting. Throw it when you get in your car this afternoon. Unless you're my children, you can't throw it in the car. But everybody else, feel free. Let it go. Let it fly. But we are super excited about continuing this series. I'm excited to be talking today about King Solomon. How many of you guys have heard of King Solomon? Anyone? Yes, a few of us. Okay, so we've been talking about several kings. We're not going to talk about all the kings because there's literally hundreds of kings in the nation of Israel's history. We're going to focus on a few that the Bible gives us more insight into. We're going to draw some lessons from these guys. And so we've talked about King Saul, talked about King David. Today we're going to talk about King Solomon. He's actually King David's son. Before we get too much farther, I'm going to ask, I need three volunteers. Yeah, that was very fast. Yes, you, Tyson. I usually wouldn't, but I'm going to let it happen. Gavin, come on. You don't call on your own kid. Here you go. Yes. Yes, you can come on up. Absolutely. Wonderful. All right. So I'm going to read just the beginning of this story, and then I'm going to ask you guys a quick question. But the way that Solomon's reign starts off, he's very young when he becomes king. He's about 20 years old, right? That's what they estimate. He's about 20 years old. Very young for a king. I know you guys probably don't think that's very young, but for most of us, would you want to be under a 20-year-old president and or king? Anyone? Anyone? Probably not, right? So 20-year-old king, very big responsibility. And it says this in 1 Kings chapter 3, starting at verse 5. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give you." So God shows up to Solomon. He knows Solomon's in, you know, Solomon's feeling like he's in over his head. And Solomon, David has been so faithful to him. And so he shows up to Solomon. He says, "Solomon, as we kind of get this whole thing started here, I just want to show up and say, what do you want? What do you want? What do you need? And I want to give it to you." And that's huge. If God asks you, "What do you want? I will give it to you." That's a big question. So I'm going to ask it to you guys. So if God shows up, Tyson, he says, "Tyson, what do you want? What do you want? What can I give you? Pizza. Anything. Pizza." That's an excellent answer and very attainable. That's good. Keep it realistic. Gavin, if God showed up and he said, "What do you want? Anything you want, I'll give it to you. What do you want?"
A hoverboard.
That's it, guys. Train up a kid in the way they should go. All right. All right, what would you like? Anything.
A dog.
A dog. Wow, that's very heartfelt and touching. And now there's a lot of responsibility on you guys. Yeah, she has a dog. You want another dog? Wow, that's awesome. Well, okay, that's again. Well, thank you guys, appreciate it. Good work. Pizza, that's great. Pizza, that's fantastic. So for a lot of us, we might aim a little higher than pizza, but you know, it's gonna be generally, if we're honest, some of you guys know the way this story unfolds, so you would know how to ask the right thing. So if I pulled adults on the stage, they would be like, "Oh, you know, you'd say something that's probably not exactly what you would ask for." Because what we would generally ask for, if God said, "I'll give you anything you want," a lot of us would be like, "I could use some money. I could use a little bit more respect, like a better job. I could use a little bit more respect, a little more influence," right? And so these are the things that are always kind of like on our minds, is the things that we really want. And so God comes to Solomon. He says, "I'll give you whatever you want." And what does Solomon say? And this is huge. Verse 6. And Solomon said, "You have shown great and steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you. And you have kept for him a great and steadfast love and have given him a son to sit on his throne to this day." And he's like, you know, "You have been so faithful and good to my father. I've seen that. I believe that's true. So let's continue. And now, O Lord, my God, you have made your servant king in the place of David, my father, although I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in, and your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for multitude. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may be able to discern between good and evil, for who is able to govern this your great people? And so what Solomon asked for is wisdom and understanding to lead well. And that's incredible, because that is not where most of our minds go when that question is asked. But he was overwhelmed by the task of leading this people. And so what he asked for is wisdom and understanding. And God says, I'm going to summarize, but God says, you ask an incredible, that's a great thing to ask for. Because most people are looking for riches and for fame and those things. And what you ask for is wisdom and understanding because you made a good request. I'm going to give you incredible wisdom and understanding, but I'm also going to give you riches. I'm also going to give you influence and fame. So, you know, this kicks off a kind of a whirlwind in Solomon's life. So the next few chapters move fast, and you find out that within a couple of chapters, his reputation of wisdom has spread throughout the world to the point where kings of other nations across the known world are traveling just to ask him questions. They're showing up just to say, like, hey, I know I got some smart guys where I live, but I've heard that you can beat them all. I've heard that if I have any question, I can bring it to you and you have the best answer. You have the wisest answer, that you lead well, that you make excellent decisions, that you don't drop the ball on this stuff. You're the guy I need. I need Solomon. If you got this problem, I don't know what to do about it. And I've asked these guys and they're kind of clueless, but I need Solomon. So they'll travel days to get there to ask Solomon because his wisdom has spread throughout the known world. And so this happens. People are bringing him gifts. People are giving the nation of Israel just incredible amounts of wealth and gold. And so as things move forward, you find out that Solomon has become by far the richest king in the history of Israel. And it describes all this stuff that he's doing with the money. He's building immaculate things. The biggest thing is his palace, which is like, in chapter 10, it kind of describes it. It reads like an episode of MTV Cribs. Anybody remember MTV Cribs? It's like you're walking around. He's like, see that chair? That's gold. That's gold. That's gold. See that bathtub? That's gold. It's huge and it's gold and that's gold. And it's like, it's everything is just immaculate and it's enormous and it's so flashy. And it's just like, it's the epitome of luxury and everything is like gold. It's like so much money. It actually says it's Solomon's yearly income. They give a number in talents, so I'll translate it to kind of more modern economy. You're talking about millions of dollars in a year that are coming in income, not to count his inheritance that he already had, not to count the gifts that are also coming in, just as he gives out wisdom to various different kings and things like that. So his wealth is staggering, his fame is staggering, and his wisdom has increased in incredible ways. Another thing that Solomon did, which is really, really awesome, is he built the temple of the Lord. So David, his father, had it in his heart that I'm living in a house and God's living in a tent, because they had a tabernacle, which is a tent that they used to carry around where they do their worship of God. And so they still had God in a tent. And he is like, I'm living in a house, God's in a tent, that's not right. So I want to build God a temple. And God said, that's a great idea, David, but you're not going to do it. Solomon's going to do it. And so Solomon does it. He follows through. He builds a temple exactly as God specified. And God shows up again a second time and speaks to Solomon. And you know, there's very few people in the Bible that actually get this kind of face-to-face, audible voice of God speaking to them. Solomon gets it twice. He shows up and he says, Solomon, I'm going to bless this place. I'm going to do this, what you said. I'm going to set it apart as holy, and I'm going to be there. People can seek me here. And so this is huge. God's spoken to him twice. He has a rich heritage from his father of faith and what it means to follow God, who God is in truth. He knows truth. Solomon has good doctrine. He's got a lot of things going in his corner. He's raised up Israel to the point of wealth where it says in verse 27 that the king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stone. So there's so much wealth flowing into Jerusalem at this point that a dude's walking down the street and he's like, oh, I tripped on something. Oh, it's just a chunk of silver. I don't need it. Throw it in the pile of other precious metals. It's ridiculous, right? But it's just like that's what's happening at this point, that Israel is doing very well under Solomon's leadership. And things look like this is going to be huge. Israel's arrived, and things are going to be just up and to the right from here. And this is like such an incredible thing. Solomon is the best thing that ever happened to Israel. Everything's so good. And then we get to chapter 11. And it says this, and we're not going to read directly yet, but it says, "Now King Solomon." And another translation, NIV, says, "King Solomon, however," or there's another one that says, "But King Solomon." And so all those are basically saying, okay, here's all this good stuff that's happening, but there's another side. However, there's this other thing. There's the rest of the story that you don't know. There's the other thing. There's the however. And this however is huge, because what it's going to mean is, as much as King Solomon has in his corner right now and all the wind that's in his sails, and it should mean that Israel is set forever, at the end of King Solomon's reign, Israel is going to begin the steady decline. They're not going to be prominent. They're actually going to start to destroy themselves. They're going to split into two different kingdoms. They're going to be under different kings. They're going to be at war. They're never going to be secure like this again. They're never going to have wealth like this again. It all starts with Solomon. And so you're like, what in the world is this however? What is this thing where it's like, I mean, everything is going so well. How in the world does he shipwreck his leadership? How in the world does he shipwreck his calling? How in the world does he shipwreck ultimately his faith and the future of his people? How in the world does that happen? What is this thing? What is this however? And we're going to read it, and then I'm going to tell you, because at first you're going to be like, well, that doesn't really have anything to do with me. But then I'm going to show you how it does absolutely have everything to do with you and me. So chapter 11. The however. It says, chapter 11, verse 1. Now, King Solomon, there it is. King Solomon loved many foreign women. You can laugh, it's okay, because it sounds a little weird, because I just told you it's super important. You're like, King Solomon loved many foreign women. Seems like a weird thing. But let me tell you, this is kind of what's going on under the surface. It's saying that what King Solomon was doing, he was involved in a practice that was very popular and common at the time, that kings would, in a way, collect wives. And they would have a lot of wives. They would marry a ton of women. And the idea was, the more wives you had, the more power you had. And it's a way you consolidated power by making treaties with other nations, and you would marry so-and-so's daughter and these kind of things. Israel was not supposed to engage in this. They were never supposed to engage in this. God had been clear on what marriage was and what a husband and a wife were responsible to each other for. And Israel is not supposed to engage in this, yet the kings in Israel did. And Solomon more than anyone. And then beyond that, Solomon actually entered into marriage with women from countries where God had specifically said, you shall not marry people from this country, because they serve foreign gods. They don't know the true God. They are serving, their hearts are devoted to false gods, and they are going to influence your heart. They're going to turn your heart. They're going to turn your faith, turn your eyes away from me, and it's going to, you're going to be looking to these foreign gods. You shall not marry from these nations. And Solomon's going to collect literally hundreds. It says he has 700 wives and then 300 more that were not wives because they weren't royal, but they were still a part of the, you know, collection, if you will, which was wicked. And it, as just as the Lord said, it would be his downfall. And it says in verse 4 of chapter 11, "For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord, as was the heart of his father David." And then it begins to explain exactly how the kingdom began to fall apart and destroy itself, starting with this. So I want to back up a little bit and see what's the big picture here and how does it speak to us, because I want to know how to avoid a King Solomon-sized shipwreck in my life. Because if you got that much going for you, the audible voice of God speaks to you specifically twice in your life. You have an incredible heritage of faith. You have good doctrine and good theology, good understanding. You're wise beyond anybody else. You have all this blessing in terms of wealth and influence, and all these things are going for you, yet you completely, completely drop the ball. And at the end of your life, what's said about you is you did not serve the Lord. You did not do what was right, and you caused destruction. I want to know how to avoid that in my life. And I know we want to know how to avoid that in our lives. So the big picture here is that of all those things he had coming in his corner and all the wind in his sails, the thing that affected Solomon's direction the most, the thing that affected his worship the most, and the thing that ultimately affected his future the most were the relationships that he let get close to him. The thing that affected his future the most were the people that he let get close. And they turned his heart away from the Lord. And I want you to hear this, especially I want you to hear this, kids. The thing that can affect you and your future and your worship and the direction of your life, one of the things that can affect it the most is the people that you let in close to you, the friends that you have close to you, the people that you let influence you, the people that are in your circle. It wrecked Solomon. It can wreck you. It can wreck me. And we need to understand it, because the truth is, as much as we want to be guarded against all these things, the thing that's going to, for a lot of people, and has for a lot of people, taken their eyes off of the Lord and turned their heart away from the God, has not been some tough circumstance where they were just like, I just don't know where God is in this, and that just turned their heart away from the Lord. I mean, that's some people, but it's not many. Then there's some people you're like, well, the clever question somebody asked, it didn't know the answer, and that's almost never what turns somebody's heart away from the Lord. It's almost always, well, you know, it just, the people I was hanging out with, it just wasn't a priority for them. It's good. We never really talked about God. They didn't really care about church or God. They didn't prioritize it. And it's not like I made a decision, I'm not going to follow the Lord anymore. What it was a slow and steady drift towards indifference because of the people that I surround myself with, because of that boyfriend, that girlfriend I met in college. It just wasn't it wasn't on their radar, and so it became slowly but surely it wasn't on my radar, and it became this drift. And so we need not only to take this seriously, but we need to know how to handle this and how to avoid it. And so the one thing you might be thinking is, wasn't Solomon the wisest man in the world? Shouldn't he have known this is going to happen? Shouldn't Solomon have seen this coming, that if I surround myself with people that do not share my values or worship my God or have anything to do with where I want to see the direction of my life, I surround myself with people that are going in a different direction, that's going to affect me? Shouldn't he have seen that? And yes, he should have, and he did. That's one of the shocking things. Solomon wrote a lot of wisdom literature that's in the Bible, and in the majority of the book of Proverbs. In the book of Proverbs, you're going to see over and over again where Solomon says, your relationships matter. The people that you put around you are going to affect you. They're going to influence you. They're going to turn your heart. He writes about it. He knows about it. And before you get on his case and say, man, I can't believe he knew better. How in the world did he make that mistake? Before you jump on his case, how many of you have ever known the right thing to do? You knew what was right, but you did not have the strength to carry it out. Anybody? Some of you guys have really powerful faith. I got my hand up twice, okay? It probably happened yesterday, probably this morning, okay? That like so often we know the right thing to do, but we don't do it. And so Solomon knew the right thing, but he didn't follow it through. And it's super, super dangerous, and it caused ultimately the downfall of his calling and what God had set up for him to do in the world. So we're going to talk about, what did Solomon know? What did Solomon know? Because he knew it. He actually nailed it down better than anybody. And we're going to pull out one specific verse and talk about it. He's had a principle here that's at play when it comes to our relationships. We're going to call it the principle of the circle. All right? So you kids, you have that little disc thing in the bag. It is a circle. And do not throw it. Let me say that again. Do not throw it in here. Throw it in your car and in your house at your parents. Yes, just don't do it now. All right, don't throw it here. So the principle of the circle, right? So we're talking about our circles, the people that are in our circle of influence. I know if you're inside this circle, it would be really awkwardly close, but I couldn't get a bigger hula hoop than this. So, you know, that's the idea. I mean, ultimately, we're talking about the people that are in your close circle, the people that influence your life and your decisions, the people that you look to, the people that you're going to make the call to when you have a tough decision to make, when you have a tough choice and something's weighing on your heart, that's the person you call. I know, kids, you don't make phone calls. You probably never will. The person you text, the person that you Facebook message, whoever it is, you have the people that you look to, influencers in your life. They're in your circle. And it matters. It matters who is in your circle. And it might matter more than so many other things in your life in terms of the direction of your worship, the direction of your future. And Solomon knew that. Solomon gives us a principle here. And if we can get this, and kind of structure our lives with this in there, then we can avoid a King Solomon-sized shipwreck with our life. So Proverbs 13:20. Throw it up there. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. I love it because it's simple. It's clean. We can remember it. Let's repeat it. Whoever walks with the wise grows wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. And like it or not, what this is saying, like it or not, you are shaped by the community that you're in. You are shaped by the people that you surround yourself with. The way you act, talk, think, and dress will be influenced by the people in your circle. That's what this principle is saying, and that's absolutely true. And the reason I know it's true, and you know it's true, but maybe you're like, I don't know if it's totally true. It is true, and I know it's true because this happened. This happened. Dudes would rock that kind of mustache with that shirt and those pants, and they would say, this is cool. You know why they thought it was cool? People in their circle thought it was cool. Right? In the 70s, if you look in your grandparents, some of you grandparents, some of you parents' photo album, you will find this. In them and their friends hanging out, you will find marriage pictures with sky blue tuxedos and fluff shirts. It is wild. Let's keep going because there's others. How many people in here ever wore a mesh shirt? Because that is humiliating, but I can see it. I see that hand. I accept that repentance. But this happened, okay? Girls, the 80s was not friendly to you. Okay, let's move on. This. The hair. Oh, that's wild stuff. That's wild stuff. Next, this is a great one. There, bam. So the people in her life, somebody in her life, she was like, I have a thing, I'm gonna do some photographs. And somebody was like, you know what you should wear? Acid wash suit. Denim, acid wash, pants, matching shirt. Tassels. That's what you need to wear. And here's the hair that we're going for. This happened. And so the 90s, for some of us, the 90s was our thing. This. Come on. And seriously, we did. We dressed like highlighters for a good 4 or 5 years of our lives. And we thought it was cool. And the reason why we thought it was cool is because we had people around us that told us, no, that's exactly what you need to wear. Zeke Cavaricci's in a crazy highlighter jacket. Pink fluorescent highlighter jacket. That's you. And that is money right there. So we know that this is true. We are influenced by the people in our circles. And this is kind of a silly example, but it goes into so many different aspects of our life that are not silly. It's true. So it has a negative side and a positive side. This principle of the circle has a negative and a positive. We're going to look at both because they're both important for us. So the negative, this is the companion of fools suffers harm. So if you have a foolish circle, if you have foolish people in your circle, you suffer harm. Okay, adults in the room. I want you to think back to a time where you made a really dumb decision. You already knew exactly what it was, the dumb decision, the bad decision that you made that set off a course of destruction and things that were terrible in your life. And it's like when you dated that person, when you went on that trip, when you made that business deal or you took that job or whatever it was, and you know now, you're like, that was a dumb decision. But at the time, it didn't seem like a dumb decision. Now I want you to think back, who was around you? Who were your people when you made that decision? Were they telling you, man, that's a bad decision? Or were they absolutely like, that is a great move. Do that thing. Date that girl. Do that thing. That's what you heard. You heard people reinforcing your decision. Why? Because you made a bad decision because you were surrounded by bad decision makers. And they applauded your stupidity all the way through it. And they were just like, that is an awesome move. And now, looking back, you're like, that was clearly a bad move. I can see so clearly that was a bad move, but you were super influenced by your circle. You were a companion of fools, and you suffered harm. And this is what happens to King Solomon. And so you might be thinking, if you're like a really critical person like me, sometimes you're looking at it and you're like, well, we don't know Solomon's wives were foolish. They might have been smart. Well, the Bible's going to define fool with a little bit of a nuance to it. And it's going to say that Solomon himself wrote in Proverbs 1 that the beginning of knowledge, the beginning of wisdom, is the fear of the Lord. That if you're going to have true wisdom, if you're going to know the way the world really works, you got to start with the fact that there's a God and this is who he is. You got to start with the true God because that's going to affect your direction. So biblically speaking, someone who is worshiping a false God or someone who is just completely just off the charts with like, I don't believe God at all. There is no God. Biblically speaking, that person is a fool. They're going to give you foolish advice. They're going to lead you in a bad direction because ultimately they're not moving in the same direction you are. They're not shaping their lives around the same values as you are, and they don't have the same definition of what success in life is. And so, biblically speaking, someone who is going to take your worship off of the Lord and send it somewhere else is a fool. And so that's where Solomon was at. He brought women into his life who did not worship his God or share his values. And over time, it wasn't an instantaneous, it was an over time, They turned his heart away from the Lord. They turned his eyes off of the Lord, and it led to disaster in his life. So we got to be careful about the people we let influence our lives. We don't want to suffer harm because we let too many fools up in our circle, okay? So that's the negative part. So there's a positive side. Good news, there's a positive side that if you walk with the wise, you can grow wise. So a wise circle leads you to wisdom. And this is huge, because what this means is it's not just a warning about not having the wrong kind of friends. It's a principle saying you can leverage this for success in your life. You want to grow. You want to make good decisions. You want to move forward in positive ways in your life. You want to grow in your faith. You want to grow in wisdom. Then you put people in your circle that are growing in their faith, that make wise decisions, that are doing these things right. You put those people in your circle, and you can grow. That's a positive principle. We can leverage that for our growth. And we know this is true. So how many of you guys, if you want to play guitar like Hunter Spivey, you're like, man, I want to play guitar like Hunter Spivey. I want to get a good hold on that instrument. I'm going to start lessons. And who do you look to? Do you go to the guy that just got a guitar as well? Say, hey, man, you just got a guitar. Do you want to give me lessons? Do you ask that guy? No, because he doesn't know how to play guitar. Who do you find? The best guitarist that you can see, you're asking that guy for lessons. Who is a guy that has 30 years experience teaching guitar lessons and has played in all these things, or he does this stuff? That's the guy. I want that person. I want that person with experience. I want that person that's good at playing the instrument. I want that person to teach me how to play the instrument. We know this is true, right? We don't want somebody that's foolish to lead us. We want somebody that's wise. And same is true of sports. Who do you want coaching your soccer team? A guy who's never played soccer? He's a great baseball player. Well, coach baseball, not soccer. I know you can look up YouTube videos, and that's really what happens for a lot of Little League. I understand that. We're just like, little soccer training. Okay, here's our first exercise, guys. You know, that's what happens. And that's because we don't have experience all the time, but we end up coaching. But if you could pick your coach, you pick a guy that's not needing the YouTube videos. He made the YouTube videos, and he's the guy that knows how to coach soccer. That's the guy who's gonna lead you to win, right? We know how to do this in other areas of our life, but sometimes we fail to see how it influences us from just our friendship circles. So guys, when we're talking about your friends, who's in your circle? Are they foolish? Are they wise? Are they leading you to good decisions or bad decisions? Guys, we believe this so much in our church that we have structured just about every environment we have around this principle. The idea that we want your kids, your high school and middle school students, and you as adults to be in circles, small circles that have influence in your life, people in your life that are pursuing after God, that share your values, that want to see you grow, and they want to grow after the Lord, and they want to pursue him, and we want to put you in small groups together. That's what life groups are. That's what student ministry has structured in theirs, and that's what kids ministry has in theirs. We want you to be serious and committed to putting yourself in circles with people who are going to influence you towards wisdom, because it means everything. Is so important. It could be one of the things that is most likely to move you forward or to hold you back with the calling that God has put on your life. Because guys, kids especially hear this, because I know that you're young and sometimes you don't really see, it's hard to look at the future, but God has a calling on your life that you have an opportunity to make a difference in the world that will last for eternity. You can use your one and only life in such a way that you can make a difference and change the world for an eternity, to make a difference in things that are eternal. That is huge. That's a massive calling and a huge opportunity, but you can put that thing right in park and just throw it to the curb because you surround yourself with people that have no idea what God is wanting to do with them in this world. You put the wrong friends close. You put the wrong influences close, and it just sidetracked you. It took your eyes off of your goals. It took your eyes off of the mission and what was most important and what God was seeking to do in and through your life. And guys, I want to clarify one thing. I am not saying you need to ditch all your friends that aren't Christians. Absolutely not. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you need to, you know, okay, well, this guy's not a Christian. I don't need him in my life anymore. I'm going to cut him out of my life. And that's what the pastor said to do. We don't need to have relationships with people that aren't Christians. That's ridiculous. And please don't hear me saying that, because we need you to have relationships with your coworkers, with your neighbors, with your friends at school, with anybody and everybody that does not know Christ, because that's the way that Christ is going to move into their life, is through relationships with people like you. And we want you to have those relationships. But the key influencers, the people that are close, the people that are in your direct circle, the ones that you call when you have a decision to make, you know who they are. You know who they are. Are they on the same track with you? Are they wise? Or are they foolish? And sometimes, you know, we just got to ask yourself a couple questions. So, you know, it's easy, you can ask, do they make good or bad decisions? You know, and sometimes that might clarify things, but that's probably a little too simple. But one thing, I think sometimes it makes us feel good if we're the smartest person in our crew. You know, like we're the guy that everybody goes to. Everybody in my crew, they know that I'm the wise one that has answers to the question. But the truth is, that probably means you have a kind of a dumb crew. You know, like, I'm saying you don't want to be the smartest person in your crew. You don't want to be the guy that's the wisest man that I know, because that means you probably don't know a lot of wise people, because if you're the leader of a herd of morons, all right, where does that leave you? Okay, is that a good thing? No, you want people in your crew that are smarter than you, that are wiser than you, that make better decisions. You want people around you that are like, I would never have made that choice, but that is an excellent choice. I don't know how they knew to do that. I want that person close to me. I need that person on like one phone call away from me when I have a decision to make. I need that person close because they make wise choices. That person has fallen after God with their heart in such a way that I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I had that kind of passion. I want that person close. I want that person close in my circle. I need those people in my life because that's how we can move forward. That's one of the things we can leverage to our advantage. So do your friends encourage your heart to pursue God? Do the people in your crew, do they tell you the truth even when you don't want to hear it? And that's one of the hardest ones because we have so many two-faced people in our life. So many two-faced friends that will tell us one thing. Man, that is awesome. You should totally do that. That is a great decision. How incredible is that move? You have a brilliant mind. That was an awesome decision that you just made. And then as soon as you walk out of the room, they pick up the phone. Can you believe what this idiot just did? Can you believe that he did that thing? Because that was crazy. Everybody knows it's a bad move. But to you, they said one thing, but to everybody else, they say another because they're, you know, two-faced friends. We don't need two-faced friends in our lives. We need one-faced friends. People that will tell you exactly what's on their heart for you because they care about you and because they know the difference between a bad and a foolish choice, and they'll tell you before you make a wreck out of your life. You need those people in your life. You need those people close. Okay, singles, college students, high school even, that are looking at dating, this whole dating world, this is super important. Who are you looking to date? Because dating is kind of a wreck these days. I don't even think it's called dating anymore, but whatever. You know, who are you trying to spend your time with, whatever we want to call it. But because if you're to ask so many people that are young and single, like, who's the kind of person you want to marry? They'll give you this description of this person that's like, you know, they have a strong faith, they're following after the Lord, they have, you know, they're smart and they have a lot of drive and all these things like that. And then you compare that list to the person that they're dating and you're like, what in the world? Are you serious? Because like that guy, not any of those things, or maybe he's like one of those things, or kind of a half of one of those things. But you're like, but you know, well, he's the guy that asks, you know. So that's who I'm dating right now. And it's like, what a terrible standard! What a terrible standard! Raise the bar. Come on, don't waste your time. You have no business dating someone that is not the kind of person that you want to marry. There's nothing good that can come out of that. It's not recreation. We don't date for fun, guys. It's not just for play. Because you could lead your heart and hook your heart onto something that can lead you in a terrible direction, shipwreck your life. It could cause you damage that's going to take decades to repair. Because the most important relationship apart from Jesus Christ that you will have in this life in terms of affecting your future and the direction of your life and your worship will be the person that you marry. Absolutely, without a doubt. And so many adults will testify, yes, please. Yes, please. Please take this seriously. It's absolutely true. So who are you looking to date? Look at yourself, okay? Because sometimes it's hard to see, you know, we give people the benefit of the doubt a lot, and we're like, well, you know, they don't always make good decisions, but they're kind of, well, okay, look at yourself. How do you act around these people? Do you act, or do they bring out good qualities in you? When you're around this person or these people, do they bring out generosity and compassion? Yeah, do you feel ambitious, like driven to accomplish something with your life? Do you feel joyful when you're with them? Or when you're with them, do you just sit around and criticize everything? You have something, you dog out everybody that's not in the room right now. You have something wrong with everybody and everything. And You're not driven to do anything. You sit around, you play video games all the time, or you talk on your phone all the time, or whatever, because you're not really driven to do anything with your life, and you're bitter, and you're resentful, and you're frustrated. Well, then you're probably surrounded by the wrong people. You got the wrong people in your circle. Not going to move you forward. Do they weaken or strengthen your walk with God? Are they sharpening your focus on Christ? That's terribly important. And here's a tough one, and this is the last one. We're going to kind of start wrapping up here. The band's going to come out here in just a minute and get set up to close this out. But are you the kind of person that helps others to make wise choices and follow after God in their life? Are you the kind of person that somebody else needs in their circle? Because we're talking about the people you want in yours, but are you the kind of person that somebody else would want in their circle? Because that's a significant question we need to ask. Am I a person that makes wise decisions? Am I following after the Lord? Am I wholly devoted to Him? Am I encouraging others in their walk with God? And if so, then you know, that's probably your first order of business right there. So as we kind of close out and these guys are getting set up, I just want to take it to a deeper issue here, because this is really a surface issue when we talk about influence and the way people can lead our hearts and the way we're influenced by our circles. Because what's happening here is the reason why the people in our life can influence us so much, the reason why the principle of the circle is so influential, is because you and I have a void in our heart of acceptance and value and worth. And we were created, hear me in this, guys, you were created by God with a void in your heart for acceptance, value, and worth that only He could fill. And when we aren't filling it with His voice, we will fill it with every cheap substitute we can find. And so we'll look for anybody's voice to speak love, to speak value, to speak acceptance into our heart, and we'll take it from any source we can get, and we'll do anything we need to do to get it from them if we're feeling that void. And the only voice that can ultimately fill that is your Maker. The only relationship that can ultimately give you a lasting and enduring feeling of value, love, and acceptance is Jesus Christ and the love of God that comes through knowing Him. So that's probably ground zero for some of you here, that you're not going to move forward and change your circle very much, because you might know the right thing, but it's hard to do the right thing when your heart is in a wreck. And if you don't know Christ, you're going to have a very hard time structuring your relationships the way you need to. You're going to have a very hard time moving forward, because the pull of acceptance is going to be so strong on your heart. And you got to do something to weaken that. And the only thing that weakens it is having a relationship with God through Christ, guys. Because you are not defined. You are not defined by what your friends think about you. You are not defined by whether or not your parents did or did not show you love in a way that you understood or felt. Even though those things can harm us and shape us, you're not defined by those things. The things that define us in the deep and substantial ways is really the things that flow through a relationship with Jesus Christ. That you're defined by what the God who created you thinks about you. You're defined by the love that He has shown you. That God, your perfect Father, has loved you to the point where Jesus Christ Himself laid down His life for yours. You are deeply loved, unimaginably valuable in the eyes of God. And if we would let the gospel and we'd let that truth sink into our hearts, then we would be kind of like shielded against the power of this kind of influence that pulls our heart in so many different directions. If we're so full up on what God has said about us, then it doesn't matter what other people say about us. If our confidence is rooted in Jesus Christ and what He says is true and the love that He has shown us, then we don't need to act and dress and go do ludicrous things to get other people to love us. So at the heart of this is a heart's issue, and at the center of it is the gospel, and it's the only lasting solution. So let's pray as these guys get set. God, we just thank You that You are good to us, that You love us. We thank You that You've given us wisdom and principles like this, that if we would just take them seriously and put them in action in our lives, that we could avoid some really disastrous situations, God. And I just pray that You would help men and women in this room and children in this room to make wise decisions, to make the right moves, to put the right people in their life and heart. They're going to keep their minds focused and their heart on the calling that You have on them to make eternal impact in this world. To not be sidetracked or delayed or put their life in park just because of the influence of the people around them, God, but that they would move forward in power and passion, fueled by a love for Jesus. And God, I pray that as we right now as wrap this up, that if someone in here doesn't know you, has never put their trust in you, has never looked to you to be their Savior, God, I pray that that would be heavy on their heart right now. And if there are children that need to have that conversation, they would talk to their parents and that their parents would come talk to us about that. And God, I pray that if there's adults and teenagers in the room that need to make that decision, that would be their first step today and that they would talk to one of us, that they would submit their lives to you, submit their hearts to you, put their trust in you, find out what it means to know more about following Jesus as Savior. And God, would you do that in this place, Father? Would you correct and encourage and convict and affirm tonight? It's in the name of Jesus that we pray.